drive up to the whole thing. Welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Thank you.
Excellent. Chris, we'll turn to you first because, in a sense, as far as Lincolnshire Agricultural Society is concerned, you are now, in this show at least, the senior partner.
Whoa.
Having done more of these shows than anything else, so very good. Exciting things as ever, the Lincolnshire Showground. You've got a big circus taking place this week, of course, have you not?
Yes, we have. We've got Planet Circus on at the moment. They've been there since, when was it, Jen?
The first show was on, the first show is today, I think, and it's on right the way through till Sunday afternoon.
Now, do you get the chance to actually see that at all, or is it a case of, no, we're not allowed to? Because, I mean, I just thought it's great team building, isn't it, surely? I mean, to actually get the whole sort of Lincolnshire events team doing sort of the high wire act and sort of...
yeah, that'd be great fun. Yeah, I'm well up for that.
I bowl that to you, Jennifer, to actually sort of see where you're going to sort of take it. Anyway. Jennifer, what's your official role within the Lincolnshire Agriculture Society?
I am the sales and events manager, so... it's part of my role to fill the showground, the whole 200-acre site of it, for the year, obviously, outside the 2 days that Lincolnshire Show's on. And obviously, we've got a lot of space to fill. We've got a great epic centre, so we fill it with conferences, exhibitions, outside events. You know, there's nothing we can't accommodate at the showground.
And the great thing, of course, is that it gets better and better almost on a week-by-week, month-by-month basis. I mean, you know, it must be a dream job. How long have you been with the team, Jennifer?
I've been with the showground just over 2 years now.
And this is your first appearance.
It is.
On the official Lincolnshire Agricultural Society Event Centre takeover of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
That's right.
There we are. Clearly, Amelia was sort of feeling stressed with the competition. So it's all good. Chris, the focus today, of course, will, as ever, still be the 28th and 29th of November. Why the 28th and 29th of November?
Well, the Lincolnshire Food and Gift Fair. Mm. Very exciting. We're just confirming our cookery demonstrators. So we've got Stephen Bennett from the Comfy Duck coming, Jane Tomlinson from Red Hill Farm. We've got the Straight and Narrow and the Rogue Saint coming to do some cocktail demonstrations. So there's plenty on offer for people to come and be inspired, ready for their winter cooking.
Absolutely. Eva, you're a seasoned pro with respect to the Lincolnshire Show, of course.
Yes,
tell you that. First time around this year, obviously, is one of our wonderful top reporters and correspondents. What sort of things have you enjoyed about the food and gift fair in past years?
That it's nice food.
Yes,
that's a true thing.
Yeah.
They always have a good range of food, I think. It's nice to have different flavours and nice to try different things. So I think it's the overall different ingredients, different foods from different areas.
And it's the spirit of Christmas indoors.
That's true.
A little bit outdoors, but you know, that's because of the weather, but it's all indoors at the Epic Centre. It's super. We'll talk more about that and much more as the show proceeds. Coming up, of course, we'll be speaking to, talking about cookery, effectively, one of the winners of Celebrity MasterChef. That's Lisa Faulkner, who had a few words with us earlier. So Lisa's going to be explaining how, you know, she's kind of left the acting behind, thank you very much, and has decided to actually move into cooking full time, really. So that's Lisa Faulkner. Richard Fitzwilliams is joining us as well. Plus, the Rugby World Cup. We'll probably get a bit of a mention. Chris, are you looking forward to the Fiji game? Do you think it's
Yeah, me and Jen were just talking about this briefly before the show. Yeah, it's exciting. I'd say golf is more my game, but I'm prepared to get into rugby.
Well, there we are. And are you a keen rugby follower?
I am, yeah. I love rugby. I'll definitely be sat on the sofa with a beer and a curry, 8 o'clock, Friday night. Yeah, definitely.
Well, there we are. You've got it sorted, my girl. Now, when you've produced not just one, not just two, but three absolutely sensational texts when it comes to cooking, you've also won Celebrity MasterChef and you're an ace premier actress. You've earned the title of Renaissance Woman. Isn't that right, Lisa Faulkner? How are you?
Oh, can I always have that big up like that? That was lovely. Thank you.
We only call them as we see them, Lisa. That's the important thing. But we're here today to talk about a Hot Point survey, which suggests that actually the kitchen is such an important room. It's where so many important decisions are actually made.
It is. Hot Point did this survey and they came out with the fact that the kitchen really is the hub of the home and that it's the integral part of family life, where I think half the people that they surveyed said it was the place that honest chats happened with their children, and, you know, all these conversations about money, about holidays, about life, about schools, all happen there.
Which kind of suggests that it's not just the Partridge Family of the 70s, long before your time, actually, Lisa, where the kitchen was seen as the hub of activities, probably actually replacing the dining room or other sort of areas of the house.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true, and I think it has become that place where you can sit and have a cup of tea and a chat, but you can also make dinner, and friends come over and they sit in the kitchen and eat dinner now. And so I think that people are more likely to spend time in the kitchen, and so therefore relax a bit more and then use it as their place to sit and chat.
I love the other findings of the survey, which suggest that over a third of people believe their cooking is a reflection of their personality, and a quarter wish they had, well, really your culinary skills, Lisa, let's be honest, not just better culinary skills, but the standard that you've set in so many ways.
That's very good.
Also, looking at the sort of multifunctionality of the rooms that's actually around there, I mean, clearly there's a time, and obviously people still have their devices and their iPads and their tablets and so on and so forth. Would you suggest that sometimes it's best to actually keep the room free from those sort of devices when you're sort of sitting down for a meal, etc., have a sort of a basket you put them in or something?
We make sure that phones are not anywhere near the kitchen table when we have dinner or lunch or breakfast, because otherwise it's so easy to pick up the phone or to answer an email or to do this while eating, and you don't chat and you don't talk and you don't enjoy the food. So yeah, we don't have phones or iPads or anything at dinner time.
Yeah, you see, that makes perfect sense from that point of view. And presumably this is something that's best to embed with children right from the off, really, not to sort of suddenly turn around when they're, shall we go, say, going through adolescence and saying, right, we're going to have the kitchen as the meeting place now.
Yeah, I think if you ever say anything like that to children, then most of the time they go, no, that's not going to happen. And so it's almost like it's one of those unwritten rules that that's the place that you can sit and chat, and that's the place that you can go to and ask for advice or something like that.
There was the classic song, "You'll Always Find Me in the Kitchen at Parties," which I think Jonah Louie actually had a hit with a few years ago.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about social events, etc. Would you still say the kitchen sort of holds its quarters as the place where, effectively, if you want to actually find out what's really happening, that's where you should actually check out?
I really think it is. I think it's the place where everyone still gravitates to the kitchen at a party. Every time I go to somebody's house, I want to sit in their kitchen. You know, not only because there's beautiful smells of cooking, but also because it's just a nice, warm place to be. I find the kitchen is like the heart of the home.
Over 200 important life decisions made in the kitchen. I don't know who's actually counted that kind of things, but that's a significant number.
It really is, but I think if you sort of look upon your life, I don't know, mine definitely, loads and loads of decisions and loads of proper emotional chats have happened in my kitchen.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's Holby City spooks Holby City. I mean, there's so many sort of lines from that point of view. It's phenomenal on that sort of basis. Briefly, we mentioned obviously your texts from that point of view, but obviously the first cookery book, which I think is still out there, Recipes from My Mother for My Daughter.
It's still out there doing well.
An instant bestseller from that point of view. As I said, I introduced you as a Renaissance woman. How do you actually combine this? Is it just a case of you spend time in the kitchen and actually sort out, do I do the writing now? Do I do the acting? Do I coordinate from that point of view?
Do you know what? It's become all about cooking, because I had to make a decision of, do I want to go up for auditions and do I want to do a part where I'm away, you know, doing that? Or do I want to be cooking and doing that cookery show and writing that cookery book? And I couldn't quite do both. There are certain times when I think I could juggle it, but then the acting job doesn't come up at that time. Do you know what I mean? It's always the way. The cooking has completely taken over my life, and because I'm doing so much cooking on telly and writing, it's fantastic. And I think, you know, I feel very lucky that I get to do it all, that I get to, you know, write cookery books, write my recipes, take my recipes of my mother's and pass them down, but also to cook every day as a mum.
It's no surprise that Tea and Cake is a bestseller from the Sunday Times, of course, released earlier this year. And again, what is the secret, Lisa? I mean, in a few seconds, I mean, is there a secret? Is it just a case of actually think about the ingredients, think about the quality and maintain the love?
Do you know what? I think it's about cooking things that you love. I think that's why tea and cake is doing well on the shelves, is because it is about making things that you can have with a cup of tea. It's not about making a great big showstopper cake. There are a few. But it's actually about just having something that you can dip in your tea that's nice, or sharing a lemon drizzle cake with your mates. But it's a great lemon drizzle. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's what it's about. To me, cooking is about sharing food and memories and loving doing it. And I hope that comes through in my books.
And certainly if you're still saying, we need more Lisa on TV, there's always Crash My Kitchen.
Yes, there is.
Exactly.
It's good fun.
Absolutely. Lisa, it's been fantastic getting a snapshot of your own life and times, but also the notion of the kitchen as the most important room in the house. Two final questions for your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today? Has it been okay for you?
It's been lovely.
Excellent. Well, that's good news. So perhaps we can prevail upon you to join us again. Who knows, maybe set up some live cooking demonstrations. Would you be up for that?
It sounds fantastic. I'd love to.
Yes, that's marvellous. Lisa Faulkner there chatting about a whole series of things, including, is the kitchen the most important place in our house? Let's go straight away to Jennifer Willows. Is the kitchen the most important place in your house?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm a big foodie. I love, you know, weekends, both my husband and I in the kitchen, cooking, glass of wine.
Over 200 life-changing decisions made.
Yeah, I think that's probably, yeah, I can imagine that, actually. You know, it's where you have all your conversations, you know. Yeah, I can believe that, definitely.
Well, you know, far be it for me to gainsay Lisa Faulkner, but, you know, there we are. And Chris, is it the most important part of your domestic environment, the kitchen?
Well, I try to stay out there as much as I can.
Yeah,
I
good
tend
choice.
To wreak havoc. Just I'm not a very
you
good
quite literally
cook,
crash the kitchen.
Well, yeah, you could say so. But no, I can cook. I learned at university, you know, a few meals
exactly.
to get me by.
Listen, you impressed William Sitwell last time around, I think, so, you know, always good on that basis. So. Eva, the McDonald household, kitchen, the important place?
Yes, actually, I think it is. I did food back in school ages ago, so I'm
a lot of people do back in
kitchen.
School, actually, do food.
Yes, well, GCSE and A-level, stuff. But and then it's also the Great British Bake Off, which gets us cooking in the kitchen. So.
Now, Eva, for the first time since you started doing these programmes and covering all sorts of things as a co-presenter, you get to meet face-to-face with the person who usurped your role when we went to the National Portrait Gallery. No, it's the fantastic Emma Tinson. How are you, Emma?
I'm very well, thank you.
Welcome back to the Midweek Drive
thank
Morning
you.
Edition.
It's
welcome
good
back
to
the Midweek
back.
Drive. Exactly. Surrey, obviously, their loss is Lincolnshire's gain.
I know.
Great
I
stuff.
Know.
We'll be speaking to Richard Fitzwilliams in a few moments. But meanwhile, are you looking to buy your first van, change your motorhome, or you just like a great value weekend break before winter hibernation sets in? How can they find out what they actually need to know by going to the season finale of the Motor Show Home, Jennifer Willows?
Yes, we've got the Warner's Motorhome season finale at the showground from Friday the 25th through to Sunday the 27th. And it's a great event. A lot of people come. We have over 12,000 campers there. There's entertainment. There's lots of food. People can come for the weekend, or they can come to, you know, add additions to their motorhomes. They can purchase new motorhomes. So it's an event we've had at the showground for quite a considerable time now. And it always proves to be a great success. They have some great headline acts as well. I think they've got Jethro actually this week.
The Jethro. We should be there. We should have had press pass. We should be sorting this whole thing through. Over 200 outdoor leisure exhibitors, caterers and craft stalls, an unmissable event, and a mere £7.50 English pence.
Bargain.
Astounding. Children bargain. Free.
Yes, absolutely.
It's amazing.
Yeah, come along.
Are you a keen camper, Emma?
I mean, I've done a little bit.
More a glamper, I suspect.
No. Actually, when I was really, really young, I was, like, really against being girly. And my parents wanted me to join, like, Brownies or whatever, but I joined Cub Scouts instead because I was so against it.
You're
but
just an action girl, let's face it.
Camping back in the day, but I haven't done it in a while, so
it's critical. And as we know, with respect to superheroines and heroines, that's part of the jingle, and I don't, which we'll hear from very shortly. And Eva, camping, of course, you've done your Duke
yes,
of Edinburgh thing,
yeah,
of course,
I like camping. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's good.
Well, there we are. Stands that so clearly. We need to coordinate that whole side of things. Coming up, a few words on a very important topic with the lady from Embarrassing Bodies, of course. That's Dr. Dawn Harper. And then Richard Fitzwilliams. And then even more as far as the Midweek Drive Morning Edition is concerned. It's 19 and a half minutes past 8 o'clock on Siren 107.3 FM.
Looking through the photos you find in my drawer.
Clearly, there are a number of issues when it comes to health that always spring to mind at all times of the year. And one of those is certainly mouth cancer. It's something people perhaps don't like to speak about, but accordingly, with the Mouth Cancer Foundation launching the Bite Back at Mouth Cancer campaign this week, we're delighted to be able to welcome to discuss this and indeed provide a simple basic self-examination to sort out some of those pesky signs that might indicate something more serious is amiss, the legendary soul that is Dr. Dawn Harper. Dawn, as ever, a delight. How are you?
Goodness, what an introduction. Thank you.
It's always critical that we get the whole thing sorted out on that basis. Now, let's jump straight into this particular aspect. Clearly, folk who have suffered from mouth cancer and have worked through that process have not had a good time in all sorts of ways. This Bite Back at Mouth Cancer campaign is something which can hopefully help that in terms of the, if not prevention, but at least early diagnosis.
That's the entire point, actually. We are seeing, sadly, increasing numbers of mouth cancer. To be fair, generally, it's more common in men, and it's usually over 40. But actually, we are starting to see mouth cancer in younger people. So the whole point of this campaign, really, is getting people just once a month to do a very simple check. And it's all about just looking at the skin around your head and neck, feeling for any lumps and bumps, feeling inside the cheek, round the gums, on the floor of the mouth and top of the mouth, and looking for any ulceration, any change in colour or texture, and as I say, lumps and bumps. Now, you know, we will all get the odd ulcer, but for most people, those should heal up within 3 weeks. If an ulcer, for example, persists for more than 3 weeks, all we're saying is please go and get that checked out. It may well be something simple like a vitamin or mineral deficiency. It may be linked to other conditions. There are certain bowel conditions, for example, that can have mouth ulcers. But in a small number of people, it is possible that a persistent ulcer or a persistent change in the skin could be a cancer. And like all cancers, the sooner we pick things up, the better the outlook. So we're really just encouraging people once a month, a couple of minutes, just check yourself. If you find anything untoward, report that either to your dentist or to your doctor for it to be checked out further.
And that's a very important point you make, of course, because dentists, clearly regular health checkups include visits to dentists. And despite people thinking, oh, I can't possibly go, it is important to make sure you have that annual checkup, really.
It is, and actually dentists today generally will do a full oral health checkup. They will specifically look for anything that could be cancerous. And so your dentist often might be your first port of call if you're concerned. But we're just making sure really that people do know. We know that smoking and drinking to excess increase your risk, and also actually a poor diet can increase your risk. So we're just asking people to just be mindful of that, and as I say, just to check themselves out.
Not that we necessarily want people to immediately start checking themselves out at this moment, because it could be difficult, particularly if they're listening to this programme whilst they're driving, but effectively in terms of carrying out the health test, it seems that all you need to do a self-check is a mirror, a good light source and clean fingers, of course.
That's exactly it, and it literally does just take a couple of minutes. There's a link actually to a demonstration that I filmed with the Mouth Cancer Foundation on their website, which is simply mouthcancerfoundation.org.
And as you rightly said at the start, sometimes if you do have an ulcer, it doesn't necessarily signify something serious. It can just be an ulcer, of course.
Of course it can. And you know, it may be, as I say, something simple like a deficiency, and your GP can treat that very quickly. If, sadly, it was a cancerous lesion, then actually the sooner that we get treatment, the simpler the treatment and the better the chance of a cure.
One of the great things about, obviously, your approach to life and the universe, Dawn, is that you have a sensible, appropriate advice in every case of the phrase. And I'm just looking at, obviously, at your website, drdawn.com, and not one, not two, not three, four wonderful texts with, indeed, a fifth guide, Digestive Health, coming soon.
Yes, I have been busy in the last year or so. In fact, there are 10 guides in total. So Digestive Health is out, I think, at the end of October. Mm. Women's health, weight and diabetes, brain health,
heart health.
Yes, I'm just wondering which ones have already gone on sale.
Critical stuff.
And There are more to come, yeah.
Well, exactly. Of course, you do realise that this is clearly going to put you well into the running for becoming the 21st century's very own Renaissance woman when it comes to all sorts of things.
There's a thought.
I won't talk about the gadget show and all the rest of the bits and pieces. That's fantastic. Briefly returning to the topic of today, which is obviously Bite Back at Mouth Cancer. As you rightly said, there is a web demonstration that people can actually go to find out details about this. If folk actually find that something's significant, again, treatment is possible. It's not necessarily a death sentence, I suspect.
No, that's exactly it. And in the case of all cancers, actually, the earlier we pick them up, as I say, the simpler the treatment. So often it'll be a much lesser procedure if we pick things up early, and the greater the chances of a cure. So please don't be frightened. Just check yourself out, and if you find anything untoward, just report that to your dentist or your GP, and then they can get the ball rolling if there was the need for treatment.
Mouthcancerfoundation.org, of course, being the go-to website to find out more details about this. We've got a couple of final questions to wrap up with at this moment. They're the standard ones, Dawn. I think you can recall them from previous packages. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today?
Of course I have.
Good. That's okay. It's, you know, in this world of constant feedback, we need to work our way through that. So the second question is, can we prevail upon you to return, hopefully, as I say, to talk about digestive health when that's released in the not-too-distant future?
I would absolutely love to. Thank you very much.
Splendid, Dr. Dawn Harper there. And a fairly important topic in all sorts of ways. Always important is to look after good oral hygiene. Isn't that right, Richard Fitzwilliams?
I don't question it for a minute, but it has to be said that though my grandfather was an eminent surgeon, I have not inherited his skills.
So I'm looking at a site that was designed by Emma Tinson's fellow third year now student, I finally put in touch, because as I said, Richard, I mean, for many years I said, Richard, for goodness sakes, we need to sort out that website.
Yes, sir, you are extremely
addressed
kind.
In every sense.
I think John Paul's done it superbly.
Well, yeah. There's one teeny absence, which I think is quite sad, because when I go to your radio interviews, I see no mention of the East Midlands Radio Station of the Year, of which, of course, you are exclusively committed to
Thursday. I sent him that detail, and he hasn't included it.
He hasn't included it. I mean,
he
I will be back.
It was perhaps a question that we were thinking of a showreel, looking at the copyright for that.
We've got BBC News Channel, BBC Breakfast, CNN, Sky News, Al Jazeera, BBC World TV, CBC, CTV, Channel 5, Arise TV, New Zealand, BBC Radio 4, BBC Radio 2, Jeremy Vine, BBC Radio 5 Live, and Emma, no Siren FM.
I mean, none of them compare.
It is mentioned there. You're entirely wrong.
Is it? I don't see it.
You haven't read it. I mean, I haven't got it literally. I will get it up here.
Richard, it's okay.
I will show you. Othello wanted the oracular proof of Desdemona's infidelity. You're about to get it, because obviously I haven't got it open.
I was also saddened we didn't have any mention of the Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie and how much you really hated it. But never mind. Let's move on. In the studio, quick introductions. This is the Richard Fitzwilliams, of whom it has been said by no less a personage and the former wonderful soul who was from Leicester, whose name has actually eluded me. Chris, who was the young lady who actually was with the whole package, who was a keen Leicester soul?
Chloe Middleton.
Thank you very much. Chloe Middleton. There we are. It's all right, Chloe. Don't worry if you're listening. We haven't forgotten you, although obviously we had then. So never mind. You leave the Lincolnshire Event Society. Just what happens. Just non-person. But anyway, Chloe, always the your views on Richard III were very positive about the whole thing, Richard. So anyway, Richard Fitzwilliams, can I introduce you to the wonderful Jennifer Willows from the Lincolnshire Event Society, where she's marketing and sales.
Hello there.
Hello.
The equally wonderful Chris Usher, who's a marketing officer for Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. Is that fair?
Good morning, Richard. Hello.
Excellent.
Good morning.
The amazingly wonderful Eva MacDonald, who's yet to meet you in person, but obviously you know well through regular Thursday slots with us.
Indeed.
And the one person of whom it has been said in so many ways, and you've met her yourself, you've been photographed together in the same gallery as well. Well, I mean, we just have to run the promo, really, because...
Jessica Ward and Emma Tinson. We could tell you their superhero aliases, but then they'd have to stop saving the world.
Because that's what she does. Obviously, her sidekick.
I don't know about
her sidekick, Jessica.
I've just found the reference, Aaron. if you read the website, you'll find it.
I'm sure, Richard. It's all right. We're all good.
I was referring to was the actual archive footage, which we haven't included here yet. But the point is, there has been a difficulty with reference to...
it's a work in progress, and it's looking a lot better than it did. So
I was
good
better about that.
Anyway, moving on, I suspect that this is the part, effectively, Jennifer, where Richard goes into usually a rant, sometimes a rave, but often a rant, about a movie. And I think it's pretty much guaranteed. I've seen some of the critical reviews. I was even tempted to go and see this, but I probably won't, even though it's got the same actor in both roles.
There's no doubt that Legend is a great box office hit, and possibly the reason is because Tom Hardy plays both Ronnie and Reggie Cray. And, I mean, director Brian Helgeland, I remember his Knight's Tale was rather fun. I mean, he's taken on something here that part of Legend, you could say, well, does that not glamorize? Does the movie glamorize? Well, I read a piece in The Guardian which makes pretty clear that the way events are depicted is very, very different from what happened in reality. But that is not the point of the movie. The point of the movie, does it convey this? Well, there was a glamorous edge to it, no doubt. Certainly the certain top actresses and top politicians were linked with these extraordinary and undoubtedly rather monstrous figures. I mean, there is no question that to portray one as a psychopath and the other as somebody who had very considerable charm, albeit, as we see, a pretty dodgy side to him, is, again, partly fictional, but it makes a gripping movie, and this is perhaps what has grabbed audiences. Tom Hardy is excellent. I mean, this is the sort of performance that you're thinking BAFTA nominations, and I'm sure that he will get one for a movie that, to be sure, it shows the Cray's violent side, but also there is what I found rather interesting, and that is the way the movie is narrated, in fact, seen from the point of view of Reggie's girlfriend, whom he marries. This is Frances, played by Emily Browning, a perfectly good performance. A lot of critics have complained that she is, in fact, too bland a character, and, in fact, it makes the movie a great deal less interesting. Well, we remember Billy Whitelaw, unforgettably, as Cray's mum in a previous movie about them.
That had the twins from Spandau Ballet in, you see, and they were Anna Scher-educated schoolboys. So, I mean, maybe people would say, why did... I mean, you know, they had two different actors in Tom Hardy. Isn't it a bit greedy, actually, being both characters? I mean, portraying both Reggie and and Ronald. I mean,
the answer to the question is, does it work? Mm. I don't mind what device is used. Do we get... Are we convinced? Are we gripped by it?
Okay, let's hold it momentarily. Jennifer, you've seen the trailer. Were you convinced by the trailer? Is this something you're going to say, I've always wanted to find out about the life and times of the Crays, because it'll help me in my structural coordination of life and times at the event centre?
I mean, the trailer looks fantastic. It does look great, and it's obviously very, very cleverly done. I just feel that, you know, it's been done already.
Exactly.
You know, for me, the one that sort of stays in my mind, like you say, it's the ones with the guys that Spandau Ballet.
Exactly.
And
the Kemps. Basically.
And and that to me is the one that sort of tells the true story.
Plus,
about
it's
it.
It's so easy to confuse Legend with Tom Hardy as the Crays with Legend as Tom Cruise, yeah, as a fantasy fairy. You know, very difficult. So
yeah,
you're very, very confused if you go expecting one and get the other. Emma Tinson.
I actually saw the trailer for this film a while ago, last time I was in the cinema, and I thought it looked really, really good. I don't know what it was about it that drawed me to it, but I looked really, really interesting.
Better than Fantastic Four, obviously, I mean, yeah, in comparison. So.
Yeah, well, you know, let's not go there. But, it looks really interesting, and I think it's kind of intriguing to see an actor play two roles, so... I think I'll go see that one.
William Shatner, of course, did it in The Enemy Within, but that's a different light entirely. He was split in two by the transporter. Eva MacDonald.
Yeah, I was going to say it's also interesting, and it's not strange, but it's interesting to see an actor play two different parts. And
two of the most notorious gangsters in history.
Yeah, that's true.
But, as we'll find out from Arthur McKenzie, they were given short shrift when they tried to enter into Newcastle. I shall say no more, but it's coming up. Yeah. He knows the story as a former police officer there. And Chris?
It looks gripping from the trailer. Again, as has been said, you know, interesting to see one actor play two parts. Possibly one I'll go and see at the cinema. But I say that every time, and Unfortunately, I don't.
It's time. Time poor, cash rich, obviously.
Obviously, before Netflix makes it.
You should hire somebody to go to the cinema for you, Chris. That's the line for it.
No, that's a terrible thing to say. We ought to mention that Brian Hegeland scripted L.A. Confidential and several other noted movies. And, I mean, he does direct this with a certain panache. Ronnie's homosexuality is emphasized, and Reggie is shown to have an appealing and charming side. Although, if you push him too far, well, as he sees it, you do get some pretty sickening scenes of violence in this movie. But I would say, however, that it is very erratic in parts. Some of the script, some of the scenes, one or two scenes simply do not come off. But overall, there is a certain gruesome fascination about them. And as for the rival gang, the Richardsons, I mean, whether invented or not, the facts of the matter are that you certainly wouldn't want to be involved with them and get...
Okay, Richard, let's draw a veil over that. Wow. Let's talk about a tormented philosophy professor who finds a will to live when he commits an existential act.
Yes, a rational man, Woody Allen. And Woody Allen, I'm delighted to say, yet again back on form, and I say this here because it does rather excite me, because we had Midnight in Paris, which was, I thought, a terrific movie. Blue Jasmine, where he was absolutely excellent, and I thoroughly enjoyed, although the reviews were mixed, Magic in the Moonlight. And here we've got Irrational Man. Abe Lucas, played by Joaquin Phoenix, a philosophy professor who's absolutely burnt out. He's impotent. He's got writer's block. His lectures are rambling and meaningless. And all the efforts of either a colleague on the staff of the university where he teaches, Rita Richards, played by Parker Posey, or indeed an admiring student ever drawn towards him, Jill, played by...
Yeah, don't go there, Richard. Don't go there. You know, it's only fiction.
It's only fiction, but here is where the movie becomes extremely clever. Jill, who has a preppy and charming boyfriend, Roy, nonetheless is tempted by the erratic and rather undoubtedly almost satanic presence of Abe and falls for him. And the two of them are in a cafe, and this is a device which electrifies the movie, because they listen to a conversation behind them, as occasionally, admittedly, one does. And then Alan's cameras actually move into that conversation, where we hear a woman complain about the way that her family life is being wrecked. In fact, she may lose custody of her child because of the behavior of a judge who's appalling under. He, of course, is a local judge. What could be better to rejuvenate your life than, since you have no obvious motive, to murder the judge? I mean, this
Well, clearly that's the first thing that springs to mind, you know, obviously.
Well, yeah. I mean, glad murder. As to you, I'm very glad, because I have to say that this is a delicious black comedy, and it's very, very funny, as well as being extremely absorbing. I mean, the darker side comes across of Alan's creation so well, and I was very, very amused by this movie. It really, really drew me in. And what's more, having succeeded, what happens to his life? Does it revive?
It goes irrational. That's the important thing. Hence, Irrational Man. The clue is in the title.
There's a lot that's rational about this sort of screenplay, because it's witty and it's intelligent and it's amusing. And you've got this iconoclastic character of Abe, who just draws women toward him. But once he's committed a murder...
Well, it's been a tough call. I would say it's a relationship deal breaker if you find that somebody you're attracted to has just committed murder. But that's maybe just me. I don't want to give advice, but still. Chris, what are your thoughts on Irrational Man?
From the trailer, it looks good. I don't know if you can describe it as a romantic comedy. Maybe not.
I'm not sure that you could, since murder is involved in it. But on the other hand,
some of the best romances are murder.
Yeah, romance. I mean, the thing is, the more erratic Gabe Lucas is, the more the women go after him. Perhaps that's a lesson for all of us.
Well, I'll put that down in my list of top 10 tips for the relationship scenario. But let's quiz some of the wonderful sort of folk from that point of view. Jennifer, did you marry your husband on the basis of, you know, he was a murderer? No, I'm kidding. Sorry, Mr. Williams.
No, I hope not. No, but I think obviously, you know, that is one step too far. That is stepping over the line.
Well said, Jennifer. Well said.
Step too
Yeah, I think so. I think that's when you start to question things. But no, I mean, the trailer looks great. It's something, you know, it's one of those ones that you think you really have to sort of concentrate on and follow through. And I think the ending will be better than the beginning, obviously. And, you know, it's Woody Allen.
I mean, as he said himself, he's never quite, he always likes to, he comes up with great ideas, but he never quite fulfills them. To me, the best
Woody... Annie Hall, Manhattan.
I'm quoting from the man himself. He might be being self-effacing. You know, that's the. I mean, I still say his best ever line was in Sleeper, where he uttered the words, "Good grief, I beat a man insensible with a giant banana or tomato or strawberry." It was some sort of fruit, anyway.
This is much more subtle. This is fun. And what's more, it's a very unusual story. And he followed it through with a terrific panache, cast a marvellous. Emma Stone's student who's totally believable.
Well, she was believable as Gwen Stacy, the girlfriend of Spider-Man, so, you know, what's not to appreciate about Emma Stone?
A lot to appreciate about this movie, especially as we can see how selfish we can be as human beings and what such fun is when you look at academia, especially American academia, and we see...
Especially American academia.
Well, I was just distancing it from academia.
We're not talking about the History Man here, thank you.
No. Anthony,
exactly.
Very, very interesting character. But what we... What we see is a chance for lots of intellectual pseudery in some of the dialogue and lectures, which can be intriguing.
Okay, it looks as though it's two thumbs up for both Irrational Man and Legend, but Emma, Irrational Man?
I'm not sure. I do quite like black comedies, but I think you kind of have to be in the right mood to watch it, so I probably will give this one a try, but... I think I'm going to have to wait
for
my time
DVD.
Out. Yeah.
If you have any problems in your life and you happen to overhear the conversation about someone who...
Sorry, Eva. Richard obviously isn't going to let you speak, so we'll start again. Eva.
I would say sometimes you like it, sometimes you don't. So, it's sort of a hit and miss.
Okay, profound stuff there. Chris, you said probably yes.
It's definitely not a romantic comedy, let me just say that. But no, it looks... Jennifer?
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those Marmite films. You're either going to love it or you hate it.
Precisely. Woody Allen on Marmite. There's a thought.
Marmite is one of my pet hates.
Well, there
no,
you
I don't
go.
Like Marmite either.
I would have laid odds you would have given Legend thumbs down, so you surprised me slightly on that one. But Legend and Irrational Man, your thoughts this week, Richard. Many thanks indeed. Emma, last two questions for Richard Fitzwilliams.
Yes, Richard, have you enjoyed your time on the midweek drive this morning?
Oh, I've enjoyed it enormously. Time has flown.
Fabulous. And will we be hearing from you anytime soon?
Well, I hope so. If I commit a murder, it'll be a while.
Yeah. just for the benefit of our listener, we don't usually have correspondents who actually are murderers on the...
Well, we don't know sometimes.
Yeah. Lindisfarne and Meet Me on the Corner, something which I'm sure Arthur McKenzie frequently you had that played as a sort of chat-up line before, of course, you met Irene, or maybe not. Good morning, Arthur McKenzie. How
morning.
Are you?
Tell me.
Good. So I was actually sort of incorrect, as I have to sort of say. When
no,
I
remember. I remember the story about them coming to the castle. Yeah, that's for certain.
But they didn't last long, did they?
No, I don't think they lasted at all.
And that's probably because they thought, well, we'll have the same actor playing both of us in a few years' time, so it makes no difference. You know,
it's
a different line entirely. Arthur, how is the Seagull film coming on?
It isn't at the moment. I'm still talking. We don't have a read-through on it until October.
Well, let's share, because again, we have Chris Usher, Marketing Officer of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, and the wonderful Jennifer Willows, Events and Marketing...
Sales,
exactly, for Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. Emma Tinson's back with... Have you spoken to Emma before? Emma, have you met... Emma Tinson's with us. And, of course, Eva MacDonald. But I think, Emma, we'd like to find out about this seagull, of which Arthur has spoken several times in the past.
Yeah, I'm really interested.
Share with us, before we get into the Rugby World Cup, because let's face it, the seagulls who might be flying over St James Park and actually checking
out.
I
would think they would be, yes.
So what is this seagull story of which you're... It's going to be the event of 2016.
Oh, I wouldn't have said that. No, it's basically just the story of a seagull that wakes up in the morning and decides to go and look for food, but he realises that the Newcastle Sunderland match is on. And he goes to St James's Park first, finds that it's not on there, and he ends up going to Sunderland, where he picks up his pizzas, pies and fish and chips.
As you do. Pizzas, pies and fish and chips.
Yes.
Sounds like the ideal snack for the Rugby World Cup, Jennifer. as you said, in 1 hour, sorry, 1 day, 11 hours, 10 minutes and 25 seconds, you'll be all set for the official launch of the 2015 Rugby World Cup.
I will, absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So what's your tip? I mean, Arthur last week sort of shared with us some of his thoughts and views on the whole sort of system. So what about yourself?
I think we've got a really good chance against Fiji. I mean, looking back at the warm-up that we had against Ireland, you know, we've got the same lineup, which is going to set us in really good stead for the match on Friday. So I'm really optimistic about this one. It's going to be an exciting one to watch.
England will not stick ball up the jumper against flamboyant Fiji, says Ben Youngs. Clearly, the creative copywriter working on the Rugby World Cup 2015 international site there. I mean, I would have thought, isn't that illegal to stick the ball up the jumper? But still, or is it just a sort of fond thing, Arthur? I mean, did you ever stick the ball up the jumper?
No,
when you,
no absolutely not. But, it's a good thought, though, isn't it?
It's a thought. It could be a euphemism. Emma.
I just wanted to ask, actually, because I recently discovered, like, the prices of the Rugby World Cup tickets, and I was really, really surprised.
Most students, no chance whatsoever, really.
Yeah, yeah. So, do you think that the rugby world's kind of developing in that way? Because, you know, you often hear about football being really, really expensive and, you know, the amount they play for players and stuff. Is rugby going the same direction?
I think it is, yes. I definitely think it is. I think the problem is, and you'll get all these very, very, this corporate stuff. And of course, the people who are in the corporate areas, they're not really watching the rugby. They're just eating and drinking. Whereas the price of tickets is absolutely astronomical, I think. It's ridiculous. I mean, I don't know what it costs to run the World Cup, but I would have thought that if they want to make it popular, even more popular, should bring the prices right down.
I should do a general straw poll, because Emma, that's an excellent point that you actually raised on that point. Chris, I mean, in terms of prices, we are talking sort of the high side of £50-60 just for a sort of very basic ticket, I think, is in probably sort of even up to £250. Chris, too expensive? Do you think it's losing the plot?
Yeah, I think we need to make it affordable, particularly for, you know, a lot of families. You know, if you're taking a family to that Rugby World Cup, for example, game, it would be really expensive. And I think we need to try and, particularly promoting sport in young people, I think, you know, it needs to be as cost-effective for people as possible so that they can enjoy it, because actually it's pricing people out at the moment.
Of course, at the Lincolnshire Show, in previous years, we've had the Leicester Tigers well represented. We've had champion things from that. Well, I mean, Jennifer, one of the things within sales is you've got to get the balance right. You don't want to price people out. You want to keep the sort of routine there. If you were swapping your hat momentarily and were put in charge of sales and marketing for the Rugby World Cup, would you say, charge the earth? £5,000 for a basic standing site.
No, I think, you know, you've got to sort of look at your target audience, haven't you, as well? And, you know, I think that the prices are high, but at the end of the day, it's the World Cup. And, you know, yes, you can go to, you know, say a Leicester Tigers match and pay £35-40 for a ticket. But, you know, the World Cup is one of those prestigious events. And, you know, and there are people out there that will actually pay it. So I think the World Cup tickets themselves are actually priced quite... You know, they are quite reasonable. It's an event of a lifetime, really. It's one of those ones that's come around, you know, it's not every year. So why not just shell
every
out
four
and
years, though.
Every 4 years? So, you know, enjoy
eight
it.
8 years if you're going from North Hemisphere to the Northern Hemisphere.
But yeah, put me in charge of that. I'd be more than happy to look at that.
It's a possibility, and she can multitask as well.
I can.
From your own perspective, Arthur, would you be making your way to St James Park, or is it a case
no,
of
no? No, I'd rather be watching a telly.
And it's not pay-per-view, so...
Well, no, I go to see the Deans.
Exactly. And Eva...
Actually, you got a better seat. I know it's a great experience when you go to see the match live. You can't beat it. But at the end of the day, you can see there's going to be wonderful coverage on the television. And you'll see it from all angles. I mean, sometimes you go to Twickenham or whatever, and you can hardly see what's going on. Although you've got a good seat, you still cannot see what's going on, the action. Whereas you've got all these different camera angles. You can see you hear the referee. You'll get a slow-mo assessment of whether it's a try or not. And I just think that sometimes I'd prefer to watch it on telly.
But Arthur, these days you could take your mobile device or tablet and actually watch it on telly and be there. In fact, yeah. I've actually been in corporate events where people have refused to actually go outside because they said, no, we'll just watch it on telly, be inside. A bit bizarre.
Yeah,
but still,
that's a good point.
Eva, 2 years ago you were sort of sucked into the hype of the Brazil Association Football World Cup.
Yes,
is the same thing going to happen with the lozenge-shaped game, as I like to refer to it, and the Rugby World Cup?
I don't know. I don't know what got me into the World Cup. I think it's because everybody else was watching it, and I just sort of caught on.
I mean, do you think it's too early in the term for student parties to actually say let's have a party to actually celebrate the Rugby World Cup, or am I sort of being very naive in saying it's never too early for student parties?
I don't know. I think us students like to celebrate anything, any excuse, yeah, exactly. Really.
The very fact that Fiji are actually in the country, probably, is worthwhile celebrating. So, Arthur, have you changed in terms of your views with respect to your predictions from last time? I think we're going for an England win on Friday.
Oh, I think I'll go for an England win, definitely. No, I haven't really. I think that Fiji are going to be a hard game, I think. I don't think it's going to be easy, but I think England have got the wherewithal on their home turf. And they've got the win behind them after the last match. I think there's a lot of expectation on them, which puts a lot of pressure on, I suppose. But, I just think they will win. I just have that feeling that they're good enough too.
Well, there we are, the words of Arthur McKenzie. Up next, for the first time in a long, long time, well, actually not next, after Andy Comfort, of course, from BBC Ambleside, Ian Lennox will be joining us because he's been back from Canada. Now, Arthur, have you spoken to Ian since he got back from Canada?
Yeah.
Because it has been suggested that, I was going to actually focus on Jessica here to find out whether she has read Ian Lennox's book.
I doubt it.
Thing, yes.
Maybe an extra chapter.
She's only been in the Isle of Man for a wee while. And as we found out from Eva, the Isle of Man has a wonderful magnetic place, does it not?
It does. It's so amazing. I've not seen it before.
Have you ever been to the Isle of Man, Arthur?
No.
It's got an amazing magnetic place. But anyway, we won't go any further with respect to that. We're going to find out more about what great things are coming up as far as the Lincolnshire Events Society is actually... It's Lincolnshire Events Society. What's the official name again? Let's get this sorted out.
The Lincolnshire Showground.
Thank you. That's right. Because you live and breathe events.
I certainly do.
That's the key thing. it's important these things are sorted through on that basis. So, Emma, go for it. Those last two questions for Arthur McKenzie, please.
Yes. Arthur, have you enjoyed your time on the show this morning?
I have, yes.
And will you be joining us again any time soon?
Well, if I'm asked, yes, certainly.
Well, we need to have your postscript on the game, and obviously you'll be watching it in full comfort, so you'll be able to talk about all the slow-motion action replays.
I'll be watching with you.
Yeah, there you go, you see. Fantastic. Arthur, take care. Speak soon.
Okay, now, bye-bye.